All right. Jack Robinson spoke about it. Kirk spoke about it. Let's hear from a man who heard both of them speak about it. Let's head out to the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in, Joe Patrick. Oh, Joe. What a week it's been, huh? What a week it's been. Let's start here, my friend. We finally got to hear from Kirk, not on the Rich Eisen show, talking to the media in Flowery Branch, and we got to hear from Zach Robinson. What were your biggest takeaways from what they both had to say after that less than stellar offensive outing versus Pittsburgh?
I mean, there's nothing you can say after that happens that's going to, like, make people feel better about it. You know, it's just like one of those gross performances. And I think that maybe if there's anything that you that would make you feel good about what was said, it was that Zach Robinson came out and just said straight off the bat, like, this was, I take accountability for this, you know, for all the issues that we were having operationally, which is the kind of accountability that you want to see. And I know even last year, someone close to my family was very frustrated with the way that accountability was or was not taken, especially by some of the players. But, you know, listen, they just got to get back on track this week. They know that. You know, I think there are some interesting, you know, conversation points that we can go down in regards to the scheme or whatever. But regardless, you know, when you look at the tape, it's just – it's execution, and it's putting yourself, putting your players in a position where they can best succeed. I think that both of those were areas where they did not, did not successfully accomplish those things against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got to get both of those right if they want to have any chance against the Eagles.
I got to ask Raheem Morris point blank, Joe, why wasn't play action in the game plan, and should we see it more moving forward? And Raheem, to boil down, you know, a 2.5 minute answer into a second or two here, is just he didn't feel that was a smart maneuver, however you want to call it, to make because of the way Pittsburgh's able to get after you in the backfield and having the quarterback's back turned in that situation. Essentially, the question then becomes, do you buy it, Joe?
Yes and no. So let me explain. What I buy is that there was an idea that they didn't want to do some traditional play action things against this front because you know that TJ Watt or, you know, Alex Highsmith or any of these guys can really just win one-on-one on any given play and really cause a problem for your quarterback, that I think that they are trying to protect and limit at this point in time the mobility. But with that said, you can obviously run play action out of like a pistol where it's not, you don't have to really kind of fully turn your back, or at a shotgun, you know, where you don't have to turn your back and you can still kind of freeze defenders. But the other thing about this, and where I, you know, it's not like to give them credit because part of the reason why is because the offense was struggling so bad. But in the second half, especially when the team was down, they were just creating too many negative plays, whether they be by a penalty or by, you know, just a bad execution. But that continually put them behind the chains where to a point where like a play action pass isn't going to hold anybody because you're not expecting a run at that point anyway. So, you know, there were some circumstantial things. Oh, and by the way, you know, I can't remember if it was Zach or Kirk who said this, but they said that they checked out of play action opportunities, you know, 5 times. Take that for what it's worth. That's what they're saying. Regardless, you've got to be kind of more diversified in your offense. And I think that frankly, it was kind of embarrassing for, you know, all these guys to answer to some of these questions with some of the tendencies that they showed in this game.
Talking all things Falcons with our buddy Joe Patrick. May slip in a United question or two at the end, Joe, because I am wondering your take on a couple of things, 5 stripes, but we'll get there in a few. When it comes to Kirk, you got to see him this week. I saw video that you posted of him taking play action maneuvers in practice, which to the chagrin of Falcons Nation, how did he look to you, in all honesty?
I mean, he's looked to me like the way he's looked for the past few weeks. And I think that there was some more noticeable and substantial progress that happened from like the end of OTAs to then kind of where he was in the beginning of training camp. And obviously we had kind of a 6-week break where we didn't see him. So maybe any progress was more noticeable to the naked eye. But to me, he's looked relatively similar really for the majority of training camp, especially the back half. And that is a player who is not like obviously a great athlete, even by, you know, a quarterback standards and like a, you know, a pocket quarterback standards. But having said that, like, you know, they've been running stuff from under center during training camp. Like, it's not like they can't or won't do it. I think that they're just in a spot, especially early in this season, where, you know, they want to do some things to help protect him. And the pistol is part of that. And Zach Robinson said, and Kirk said, when he came in April, like, they had a plan to, you know, run this pistol offense that they kind of, you know, I kind of consider Kirk Cousins almost like a co, like a colleague of Zach Robinson when it comes to, you know, how they're actually executing this offense. And obviously that needs to get better this coming week and in the weeks to come. But, you know, I don't think that it, while the pistol took us up by surprise, just the fact that it was exclusively used, I don't think that it necessarily means that Kirk Cousins couldn't do something under center. Having said that, I don't think that they're going to deviate from this. I do continue them to still do a lot of stuff under pistol, in pistol and shotgun. I do think they might get under center a little bit more from time to time, but I think it will be something that's sprinkled in similarly to the way that we see other offenses sprinkle pistol in. But, you know, we're seeing the Rams do this as well. Sean McVay, they went a lot pistol heavier last year, and then they've shown, even in the tendency in the first game against the Lions, they went a lot more pistol than they ever have before. So this could also be kind of like an ideological thing of the way that, you know, things are trending under that kind of schematic design.
This week, I'm much more worried about the interior pressure from the Eagles than I am the outside pressure. Drew Dahlman, to put it politely, I don't think had his best showing against the veteran Pro Bowler Cam Hayward. What can they do to make sure that Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis don't wreck this one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because, you know, pass rushing comes down so much to just, you know, solo wins. But to your point about Dahlman, and, you know, obviously McGarry had his issues last week as well. But, you know, this is a Falcons offensive line that is statistically very good in certain areas, and they are statistically not, they're statistically below average in a lot of areas. And when we talk about the offensive line as a whole, we often think about them as one of the better offensive lines in football, especially under Arthur Smith, because he kind of helped build that offensive line, and he really kind of understood how to model his team and design his plays around their what they were able to do well. And I think that that's another thing that kind of had people kind of soured on this whole scheme after that first game was, you know, you just didn't see them kind of, or actually you saw them exposing the Falcons offensive line and making them do a lot of what I think a lot of Falcons fans understand is kind of what they do worst, which is naturally, you know, natural drop back pass protecting. That means no play action pass, just a straight drop back. That has not been what this team has done historically. And it's, you know, it's just not what these offensive linemen are as good at doing as they are at some other things. And it goes back to your question about play action, what we were talking about earlier. That's why you feel like you want to really not just sprinkle that in, but make it a staple of your game, because Kirk Cousins has shown a propensity to, you know, he's been one of the best play action quarterbacks currently going in his career. And then that's how this offensive line has also operated. So it'll be very interesting to see just how much they kind of deviate from the scheme that they drew up for the Steelers, which, you know, admittedly, they admitted it was like kind of very, very specific to the Steelers and just how good that defense was and how much they wanted to respect it.
Very different wide receiver room matchup this week for the DBs of the Falcons when you got the likes of Brown and Smith and Dotson and Goddard and Saquon out of the backfield. Quite frankly, Joe, I'll put it to you matter-of-factly, is the cornerback room ready to handle those big three?
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll find out Monday, but, like, you know, I do think that obviously this is a much, much, much different test. But I think it's as different, with personnel wise, with just the amount of talent that the Eagles have in all those skill positions, as it is scheme wise with what Arthur Smith wants to do versus, you know, like the way Kellen Moore kind of sets up his offense. Now, that's a little bit different. I think that they're going a little bit more toward the Arthur Smith or, you know, McVay, Shanahan style versus what they were doing under Shane Steichen, which was like solo shotgun. But, you know, I think that obviously it presents a challenge and they're going to give up more yardage, especially through the air. But Chris, I think that actually this matchup, while they're very likely, you know, they're going to give up more points, they're going to give up touchdowns and things like that in this game, because it's a better offense. I think there is an opportunity for turnovers like there was not in that first game, despite the fact that you might think that Justin Fields is very turnover prone, which he is. You know, Arthur Smith protected him a ton, and just what they ended up running, there was not that many opportunities for this defense to kind of make that game-changing play. And I think that Jalen Hurts is a guy who is going to spread the ball around because he's got all these options to go to. And he's, again, he's in his first year under a new offensive coordinator, a very good one, but sometimes you can see quarterbacks just make the wrong decisions at some of those moments. And, you know, they might play really well, you know, 95% of the dropbacks, but if those 5% of dropbacks are actually picked off, that could change the flow of a game. And it's something that this defense, the coaches and the players have really been talking about this week, that they want to, it's really kind of grinding their gears. You can tell that they lost that turnover battle 3-0. So there is, I think, an opportunity for them in this game, despite the fact that it's obviously going to be a huge challenge.
How was the vibe and the mood this week at the Branch?
You know, it was a little, guys seemed like focused. I wouldn't say they were definitely like quieter, just like kind of in the locker room. But you know, I felt like guys are still like determined. You know, I'm like walking past Kirk Cousins in the locker room, and he's sitting there with his playbook and he's talking to Darnell Mooney. Literally, I could hear him like going over a play. I don't want to repeat any terminology I was hearing, but like you could see that they were like, you know, working through something. So, you know, these guys are really professional, and you know, they're not going to, you know, like the coaches will always say, like ride the kind of ups and downs of the season. But I think that with a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who's kind of the model of that kind of, you know, long-term professional behavior, knows how to prepare, you know, doesn't change his process based on the results. I think that's, it's important for this team to have that kind of leader, especially on the offensive side, for a lot of these young skill position, you know, pass catchers especially, who I'm sure they get more emotionally frustrated when they're not able to contribute to wins. I think that it helps knowing that they've got that veteran under center who's going to give them another good chance to win the following week.
All right, before we wrap up here, as we're talking with our buddy Joe Patrick, Falcons insider for 92.9 The Game. Post-Boca Negra era for United, what do you foresee happening over the next couple of weeks and months?
I think this is going to be a really interesting last few weeks. Put aside the, you know, playoff implications and whatnot, because honestly, I don't think even a lot of Atlanta United fans are, you know, I guess if you ask them, yes, they want to make the playoffs, of course, but there's like very little hope that they would be able to do anything, even if they got there. And there's just, you know, there's not obviously an understanding that this is not like a championship caliber team at this point in time. But I think it really is important in terms of how you're going to be setting the table for the next season, not just for the players who are obviously competing for jobs and kind of want to show themselves to the new front, I guess you could call it a new front office, even though, you know, Garth Lagerwey is taking over on an interim basis. But, you know, I think that there's a lot for the fans to also take note of with some of these players. And obviously you've got a new designated player who came in, Alexei Marinchuk. And so how does his qualities and how they're different from Thiago Almada kind of influence the players around him and make people maybe feel differently about what players are going to work well with him in the long term, because he really is a centerpiece to this team. And then I know for the front office, they're obviously using this time to evaluate, but they're also getting busy on kind of the budget sheet. And actually, they made a move yesterday right before roster freeze happened to change a designated player off the designation off of Steven Gregerson and onto Bartosz Schlisch. And what that is going to end up doing, because of a lot of accounting that's done in the background, by doing that, they're opening themselves up even more room to work with this coming off season. And it's really going to be a wild ride from the end of this current season till like February of next year when next season starts. They're going to be able to add 2 DPs most likely to this current group without having to sell anybody, as well as a bunch of capital to go out and spend on those players, as well as other players for the roster. Really, really important weeks to come for this club overall for the long term here.
Can you make a significant change in 1 year's time? Could they be this year, this time next year, Joe, could we be talking about a top 3-4 seed in the table?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the story of MLS, is it's like kind of one of those not for long leagues where it's really hard to keep championship teams together. And it's also, you know, it's actually harder to kind of build up your team because you have to do dismantling. It's kind of like the NBA. It's like when you get the bad contracts, you got to like spend some time to get rid of those. But the good news for Atlanta United is they have gotten rid of those. The frustration has been they haven't been able to replace those players, and they've had to get rid of some of the biggest contracts as well. But they are in a stage where they are building. We obviously saw kind of the first step with Alexei Marinchuk, this transfer window, but they're ready to add more. And I think that, you know, that's going to be the kind of fully loaded arsenal we expect going into next season to be able to shoot for a championship and have a core of players that are going to be here for a long time to come.
Appreciate it, Joe. We'll talk to you again next week. Hopefully we are talking about a W. Praying we're talking about a W. We need a W, Joe.
It'll be therapy nonetheless.
Yes, exactly. All right, we'll talk to you next week. That is our buddy.
Like this right here.
Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, awaiting our buddy Michael Duarte from NBC LA to talk some Braves baseball. But before we get to him, I'll update you on what's going on in the world of college football. Some interesting games coming down to the wire here. One that is not Oklahoma State had a pillar to post victory over Tulsa, 45-10, so they go to 3-0. Boston College had a lead, and then they coughed it up against Missouri. Luther Burden having a big day, over 100 yards and a touchdown. That one is in the fourth quarter with about 10 minutes left. LSU, South Carolina has turned into a real barn burner. South Carolina was up big. LSU came back. South Carolina came back. LSU came back. So they are in a back-and-forth affair with just over 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. South Carolina is up 33-29. Excuse me, Garrett Nussmeier is putting up some big numbers today, 256 yards and two touchdowns, along with the running back for South Carolina as well, matching that. 16 carries, 136 yards, two touchdowns as well. Couple of finals to give you two from the early slate. Alabama. This one was no contest, but partially because Tyler Van Dyke, the starting quarterback for Wisconsin, had exited the game early with a leg injury. He came back out, pads off, crutches on, cast on. So we'll wait to see what the deal is there. Unfortunate for him, as he was looking to find a second life in college football after a unsuccessful career at Miami. Michigan back on track. They're now 2-1. They take care of Arkansas State. They didn't blow them out. It was 28-18. And last night, too, we didn't talk about this one. A very impressive showing by Kansas State. They're 3-0. They blow doors off of 20th-ranked Arizona, 31-7 there. Coming up later today, you know all eyes will be on Georgia and Kentucky. That is a 7:30 p.m. kick. Georgia heavy favorites. Wow, you know what's crazy about this game? So it started during the week. Help me make this make sense. Georgia at the start of the week was 24.5-point favorites over Kentucky. Mm-hmm. That number is now down to 21.5.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Everybody's taking Kentucky plus the points, so that moves the line.
But did you see how they played last week? What in your right mind makes you think that Georgia isn't going to walk right over them? I don't understand.
I don't know. I mean, but that's just what the betting line. The only reason they get smaller is that everyone's taking the points and be like, wow, if everybody's taking these points, we're giving too many.
I don't get it. I think Georgia's just so much better. I mean, you, especially on the trenches, they're going to be in the backfield. They're going to be in Vandegrift's face all day.
Yeah. Well,
you would think.
We'll see. Because think about it. If you jumped on it early and then you see it comes down, you're like, man, you know, I gotta steal because I got these points because it's coming down. But if you waited and you're betting on Georgia, now they're like, wow, at first I had to cover 3 touchdowns and a field goal. Now I only got to cover 3 touchdowns. So if you wait, it's always best to wait to see where these lines move.
No,
so,
I agree. Yeah. I'm just shocked that it's come down 3 points since the start of the week.
The only way that can happen is everybody's taking those points, and they're like, wow, everybody's taking these points. We can't keep giving this
If Kentucky scores more than, like, 14 points, I'm going to be shocked.
Okay. So if they score 14, means UGA's got to score 35-plus.
Easy.
They can do that in the first half. Maybe the 7 minutes turns into 9 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Other games coming up this evening. Oh, I'm all over Ole Miss. I took them for our Dukes and Bell pool this week. They're minus 20 in a hay over Wake Forest. Jackson Dart, he's been really
playing himself into a real NFL caliber quarterback. And we were talking about the UGA schedule earlier. Think about it. Right now, over the next 4 weeks, they play 1 versus 2, 1 versus 4, 1 versus 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Insane. Yeah. With number 2 Ohio State probably waiting sometime down the line.
We talked about Notre Dame earlier. They're taking on a 1-0 Purdue squad. I don't know. Riley Leonard, to me, man, he's been, I mean, maybe the biggest bust so far. I mean, I don't even know if it's maybe the biggest bust so far this transfer window. He's only thrown for 321 yards, no touchdowns, and 2 picks throughout that season so far. I mean, yikes. He was
When before he got injured last year, everyone was like, oh, this is going to be the next big thing. Prototypical quarterback, huge arm, really smart. I mean, I don't know what's going on there. Coming up in about 5 minutes from now, we're going to get the 3:30 slate. Oregon, listen, have they been barn burners? No, they have not. Oregon State's 2-0. I'm not saying they're going to win the game. Oregon is favored by 18.5 points. I think they'll be fine. But Oregon, if you guys remember at the beginning of the season, there was a lot of polls that had Oregon number two.
And Dylan Gabriel was a real high Heisman front runner. Pretty much him and Carson Beck were 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, which quarterback they thought was going to be the, you know, the real standout. I mean, it's not going to change. It's got a lot of ways to go. If Dylan Gabriel can get on the type of rhythm he had last year at Oklahoma, they can still put up big points. They haven't done it yet so far. He's only got 4 touchdowns through 2 games, which he used to have that in a quarter sometimes. So we'll see. This is a good game for them, rivalry game. Think about it. Oregon State, third week of the year.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Oregon State's pretty good. I mean, they were decent last year with DJU, but I still think Oregon will be fine in this one. But I don't expect a blowout. I don't. 18.5 is a big number to me in this one, but we'll see. Ball State in Miami. Miami's 2-0. Cam Ward, I mean, he looks great. He's got 700 yards, 6 TDs, and only 1 pick on the season. I think Miami obviously rolls there. They're 36.5-point favorites. That's a really big number, too. But
you know what kills me about this is I'm looking at ESPN as you're going through these, and I'm looking at the tickets available for certain games.
Oh, the get-in price? $3. $3 if you want to go to the U. $3 to watch them roll over Ball State.
That's insane.
Hey, if you're a U fan, though, what a fun afternoon. You
feel
me?
You feel me? You could never. I don't think if you waited outside so the game was a blowout and somebody came out like, hey, can I buy your used ticket? Then you still can get a ticket to Sanford Stadium for $3.
Oh, no, not at all. Tulane is going into Oklahoma. I think they'll be fine there. It's only 12.5 for OU. I mean, they're not lighting the world on fire on offense. I get that. But that's a little bit. Some curious lines. As I'm going through these lines, I'm noticing a little bit curious going in both directions here. And then I saved this one for last. Carl Dukes on Dukes and Bell for his official picks took Texas minus 36 over UTSA. I don't hate it. I mean, it's a gutsy play, but I don't hate it. I think there could be a real chance that they cover this sucker.
UTSA is a quality program. A quality, quality program. I mean, they put guys in the NFL. That's 5 touchdowns, 36 points. If you could tease that or parlay that and get an extra 6, maybe take UGA, you know, and subtract 6 from theirs, add 6 to, you know, UTSA, there are some really interesting bets. I love parlays where you can move those lines by 6 points.
Here's the reason. They gave up 49 points last week to Texas State. This isn't Texas State coming to town. This is hook 'em that you're going to have to deal with. Actually, they're on the road.
In Austin.
Yeah, that's – oh, my goodness.
A little trip over from San Antonio to Austin, about an hour and a half.
Utah is still minus 20 over Utah State without Cam Rising. That's interesting. I think they're – is their backup quarterback Zach Wilson's little brother? Am I crazy? Am I getting that wrong here? I got to look this up because – if it is, I think I'm right on this.
Isaac Wilson.
That's Zach Wilson's
freshman.
Brother. Yeah,
from Utah. Wow,
yep, that's Zach Wilson's little brother.
Wow,
how about that? So he's going to get a chance here.
Future number two pick in a draft.
Yeah, he's going to right after Aaron Rodgers retires. They're going to draft Zach Wilson's little brother to take over the reins.
We get to see Mama Wilson a little bit more.
Hey,
she was the best part of that draft. That's Mama Wilson.
True. Although if you follow her on social media, she's a little cuckoo.
Yeah. Like I said, she's the best part of that draft for a few reasons.
Yeah, little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But obviously a huge slate coming up. But we're all eyes on UGA here. He made the trip, the cornerback for UGA that got himself in some trouble. Connor Riley told that. He reported that to us earlier. We'll see if he plays.
And to me, that's problem number one. How are you on the road list the next day after getting out of the lockup?
Trevor Etienne dressed.
He's not Trevor Etienne. And that wasn't the very next day either.
No, it was months later.
Right. The very next day, no, but you ain't on this bus. Sorry. You're staying back in Athens.
I agree, but it's just not the way that they do business.
And that's a problem. That's a big problem. I've been around college football. I've been around all college sports. You make this mistake the night before the game, you ain't traveling. Sorry. I'll talk to you. Matter of fact, I want to see you for 3 days, and I'll definitely talk to you when we get back to town.
Yeah, at least minimum. That should be the minimum. All right, 404-726-0929. We got one segment left. When we get back, going to let you hear from Jake Matthews, Grady Jarrett, Bijan, Kyle Pitts. They all talked about the loss and how to move on. And Bijan Robinson had something very interesting to say that I'll let you hear next. You don't want to miss it. As we wrap up this puppy, a four-hour Saturday show with you here, Chris Thomas taking you till the top of the hour on a gloomy outside but glorious inside, because all we're doing is watching and talking college football with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you for another 15 minutes, handing it off to our buddy Grant McCauley. And from the Diamond, big series, the Braves and the Dodgers. Braves took the game last night. A great start to that series for them. Mets keep on rolling, so it's going to be a tight, tight race here with just about 15 games left to go. But let's finish where we started. Great slate of college football in the noon window. All those games wrapping up. LSU and South Carolina coming down to the wire here. Alabama rolls. Jalen Milroe, 5 touchdowns. Some really, really good action coming tonight as well, including UGA taking on Kentucky in Bourbon Town. All right, let's hear from some of our guys as we wrap up shop here, as we move on to the Eagles and turn the page on the Steelers. First up, Jake Matthews. He was talking about T.J. Watt and Caleb McGarry and that matchup and the challenge it presents, because, guys, it's not getting any easier these next couple of weeks in terms of the edge rushers.
It's the same type thing. I think he was on Caleb the whole game. I didn't even have a rep against him today. But, yeah, we knew going into this, like I said earlier, he's one of the best to ever do it. He's one of the best in the league, and there's a reason he gets that notoriety. So, yeah.
Respect.
Yeah, definitely respect, definitely.
We started the show talking about this, guys. Yes, T.J. Watt, one of the best, maybe the best in the game. Myles Garrett maybe would like a word. It doesn't get any easier, guys. The path is just as hard. You get the two big dogs in the middle, pun intended, that weigh about 350 each in Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis. You get N'Kobe Dean, Keely Ringo. You get the UGA defense coming at you. They still got Brandon Graham out there as well. So that defense is not going to be any easier than the Steelers. Then you get Chris Jones, who's the best defensive tackle in the league and the closest thing to Aaron Donald now that he's retired. And then the following week, it's our good old friends in DeMario Davis and Cam Jordan, who seem to wreck the game every time we play them. So this is not going to get any easier. So I hope Jake and Raheem and Kirk and everybody that we heard from this week talking about T.J. Watt and how he wrecked the game plan, you better not let that happen again, because you're getting quality edge and in the middle opponents for the next 3 weeks in a row. Next up, we have Grady Jarrett talking about he was disappointed, but he was pleased with the defense because, for what it's worth, they did play well.
I think a little bit of both. Like week one, a little communication error sometimes, but also guys playing hard, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of room for improvement. But with it being week one, I mean, I'm also proud of the effort and the adjustments that we made throughout the game and how guys communicated together and stayed together. So, I mean, I think it was a little bit of both.
Yeah, obviously the defense wasn't the problem. 6 field goals and half of them were from 50-plus. So you know right there that the defense did their job. I know everybody's picking on A.J. Terrell because he just got paid, and there were a couple of plays by George Pickens that stood out. But George Pickens only had 80 yards. He didn't have a Terrell Owens or Randy Moss type effort out there. He was okay. He didn't have a touchdown. A.J. Terrell was fine, and I'm not worried about him moving forward. But the defense as a whole, they did. They played really well. It was the offense that completely wet the bed. And we know about all the adjustments and all the different formations we spent all week talking about, and how healthy is Kirk, and why didn't they run play action pass, and hopefully Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris, to use their quote, were in the lab working on things and working on ways to not let Philadelphia do what Pittsburgh did, which was wreck the game plan. Next up, let's hear from Bijan, a couple of cuts from him. First, talking about how the turnovers, minus three in the turnover margin, by the way, really hurt them.
We started off fast, and, you know, obviously turnovers aren't good in any game. And, you know, we had three of them, so, you know, it was tough to come back from, especially, you know, some were kind of going into the end zone. But, you know, we got to eliminate those turnovers and just continue to play more physical. And obviously this was our first game together, but, you know, now we know how it is, and, you know, now we have a whole season to – now we got to execute and, you know, be comfortable with each other and go out there and just, you know, play fast.
If you go minus three in any of the next three games in turnovers, guess what? That is an automatic L. I'll say it again. If you go minus three in any of the three next games against Philly, against KC, or against New Orleans, who put up 47 points, by the way, I don't care if it's against the Panthers. You think the Falcons would have put up 47 points in week one if they played the Panthers? So you still have to take them into account. If you go minus three in any of those games in the turnover battle, you are going to lose. One more from Bijan. He said TJ Watt made life difficult, but we will learn from it.
You know, they're bringing pressure, you know, with you know, they got a very talented player in Watt. And, you know, he brought some pressure, and we were trying to just contain him. But I think it was really good, you know, that we had him first game. And it was a great test for all of us, just because, you know, when you're playing against a guy like that, you know, it gets us better, you know, for these games coming up. But hats off to their defense for, you know, maintaining that pocket to get sacks and, you know, get turnovers. But this was a good one to learn from, and obviously we don't want this to happen again.
Yeah. I like the spin, I guess, is the best way to put it from Bijan there. But you know what? They failed that test. Epically. It was an epic fail against the good Pittsburgh defense. But the offense, no. I'm sorry. You don't get a pass. You had all offseason to prepare for this game. You had all offseason to get your ducks in a row with Zach Robinson and make sure that he was ready to go with an effective game plan. And the game plan stunk. It was not NFL quality level. They did the same thing. It was, I always joke around with Oren on the night show. I always ask him, I say, Oren, what is the definition of insanity? It's repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's what the Atlanta Falcons did in the second half versus Pittsburgh. There were no adjustments. They just let TJ Watt eat their lunch all afternoon long. He was living in your backfield. I don't care about silent counts and all that. You got to make it so that your offense can function. Their offense didn't function, never mind being prolific, which were the expectations, maybe unrightfully so, that we put on them. But their offense couldn't function. Like, Kirk Cousins did not look, feel, see comfortability in the entire game. I know everyone's denying it, and he's saying everything's all good, but I did not see a confident quarterback back there. Not just because of TJ Watt, but because of his own poor play. He threw two picks. That's uncharacteristic for Kirk. He averages about 10 a year over the last 5 years, and he got two of them in week one. Not good enough. One more cut from you. Kyle Pitts was talking about the turnovers, and once again, you can't have it.
Yeah, obviously, got to try and work on, you know, minimizing those turnovers, but it was some good things that came out of it, and then we can go back to the tape and look at it and, you know, fix it going on tomorrow.
What good things, Kyle? I'm sorry. Exactly what worked on offense for the Atlanta Falcons? I guess Bijan Robinson, because he had like 100 total yards from scrimmage. Well, that's it. Kirk was awful. Drake was awful. You had one good touchdown catch, but that was it. Didn't do anything else for the game. And was absolutely awful in chip blocking, which they need to just erase that from his play sheet from this point going forward and just use Ross Dwelly and Charlie Warner. I don't care if it telegraphs what you're doing, because if Kyle Pitts can't do it, then what does it matter anyway, right? What does it matter anyway? For this team to win next week, they need to complete, or on Monday night, next week technically, they should be able to change up their game plan entirely. They need to. It needs to be more creative. It needs to involve more play action, more deception. I mean, you had that one really good play to Bijan on 4th-and-1 where it was like a jet sweep type deal and you were able to cash in. Where was that? Where was more of that? Why, you used a couple of nice things. You rolled Kirk out. He got the touchdown to Pitts. Why wasn't there more of that? You had the end around to Bijan. That worked. Why wasn't there more of it? Why did you just keep going back to the same vanilla stuff over and over and over and over again? I'm not sure. All right, E, we got like 3 minutes left here. Before we get out of here, let's make a final prediction. I'll put you on the spot here. The Atlanta Falcons on Monday night, will they be 1-1 or 0-2?
Unfortunately, they're going to be 0-2.
What happened?
I just don't see them having enough firepower or continuity at this moment to stick with Philly's offense. No matter how good we play on D, Philly's offense is potent, and Philly, as we've seen, is a very tough opponent in September and October. This is not the Philly team of November and December that probably we would see, you know, that's the team they're trying not to be anymore. In the early parts of the year, they're very tough. They're at home for the first game. It's at night. I don't like our chances going into that building at night and be able to go touchdown for touchdown with them from what I saw last week.
I agree with everything you just said, but I'm going to take the Falcons. I agree with everything you just said. You're right. You're right. Here's the thing. You're right, but the Falcons have to win this game. They have to. They have to. Not. I mean, the definition of must win does not apply here. This is not a must win game, but they have to win this game. I'm going to parse it. It's not a must win, but they have to win because they're not going to beat Kansas City at home. And then you're at risk of going 1-3 or 0-4. And if that's the case, again, I started off the show by saying this. It's not that it becomes impossible, but you have a razor-thin margin. You can't trip up against Washington Dallas. Or Dallas. Well, I don't know about Dallas. They look, I mean.
But we'll see. Let's see if, Dallas goes to 2-0, Dallas has a real match
they do.
Tomorrow.
They
you
do.
Know, and all us Falcons fans need to be rooting for the Cowboys because they're playing the Aints. So we need them to say, hey, you know, last week wasn't a fluke. Yeah, it's extremely pivotal game. Like I said, I don't see – from what I saw last week, don't see how they can do it. Don't see how they can do it.
You're right, but they're going to find a way. Something's going to happen. Jalen Hurts is going to cough it up. They're going to tackle Devontae Smith, and he's frail, so he's going to drop the ball. Something's going to happen. Something funky's going to go down in Philly, and we're going to walk out with a 27-24 victory. Younghoe Koo beats it at the buzzer from 54 yards. That's my prediction. 27-24 Falcons. They get it done on Monday night. All right, E, great job. That'll do it for this edition of The Other Side of the Glass. Thanks to my guests, Joe Patrick. You heard from Matthew Judon, Connor Riley, and BMAC as well. Really, really enjoyed hanging out with you guys for the early window of the Saturday games. Excited for tonight as well. I think UGA is going to roll, and we're talking about a nice little tidy victory come Monday as well. All right. That'll do it for this edition of The Other Side of the Glass. Chris Thomas been hanging out with you. Stay tuned. Our buddy Grant McCauley, you want all the inside baseball that you can handle from the diamond, is coming your way next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.